All righty.
The court will now call the City of Fort Worth versus Diana Coase. May it please the court, Ms. Lynn M. Winter will argue for the appellant, Mr. Stephen R. Temple will argue for the appellate.
May it please the court.
Sure.
Counsel, my name is Lynn Winter, and I'm here on behalf of the City of Fort Worth. We are here on whether or not the trial court erred in denying the city's motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction, because in this case, Appley was owed only the duty owed to a licensee, because the city submits that she did not pay for the use of the premises on which she was injured, and because of that, the city did not have actual knowledge of an existing danger. Therefore, the city's immunity is not waived under the Texas Tort Claims Act. Under the Texas Tort Claims Act, a premises defect claim imposes on a governmental entity the duty a private person owes a licensee on private property, that is, to use ordinary care to warn of, make safe from a dangerous condition of which the city was actually aware, unless the claimant pays for the use of the premises. And that's the issue that we have here. An invitee status requires payment of a specific fee for entry onto and use of a public premises. And that fee must be paid specifically for entry onto and use of the premises where the injury occurs.
Let me ask you this, counsel. If I pay a fee to go into a parking garage, okay, in private situation, is it your position that I'm only paying for the parking spot that I actually park my car, and that I'm not actually an invitee as to any other aspect of the parking garage, even though I absolutely am going to have to use the elevators or the stairs or just walk to a place of egress to get out of the parking garage, and when I come back, a place of ingress?
No, Your Honor, that's not what we're saying. And if you'll look to the cases specifically, the Dallas and Houston courts have heard what I call the airport cases. So you have the Dallas case, which is at Love Field Airport, and that's kind of what happened in that case, is the claimant there paid for a parking spot inside the parking garage attached to Love Field Airport. They also paid for a ticket to fly out somewhere, but they were injured outside of that parking garage and not on the plane that they had bought the ticket for. And the court there said that they didn't pay for the particular use of the premises where the injury occurred. So if they had been injured in the parking lot, they paid for use of the parking lot, that space, and that area that is encompassed within the parking lot. But however, they were injured in the terminal building. Just as here, Ms. Posey did pay for a surface parking spot in front of the Will Rogers Memorial Coliseum, and she did pay for a ticket to enter the particular premises where the Christmas in Cowtown gift market was being held. However, where she was injured was a sidewalk that runs adjacent to the Will Rogers Memorial Coliseum complex.
Under your license agreement, the facilities that you are giving them access to and that they're paying for includes, quote, contiguous common areas and such are the areas as agreed upon necessary to accommodate patrons for the above stated purpose. The above stated purpose is attending Christmas in Cowtown gift market. So how can you say that the area where she was, which is a common contiguous area, isn't included for what she paid for?
Because she didn't pay for that particular area. If you look at that license agreement, that's what the Junior League paid for. And then you look at the addendum that's attached to it.
She's an invitee of your invitee.
You would argue that, but I'd say that she is not, because you have to look at the cases as a whole. And the Junior League did pay to rent those specific areas. If you look at the addendum that's in that license agreement, it lists particular the Stagecoach Room. And yes, they had to allow the use of the continuous common areas because of the setup of the Coliseum. And if you look at the record, specifically at page 42, Kevin Kemp is our facilities director, and he says that it's public spaces.
But we're looking at the terms of the agreement that you had, and it says, use the City of Fort Worth owned facilities herein described, including. It doesn't say in addition to, it says including. So what we're talking about here, this language arguably is part of the included premises which somebody's paid to use, right?
I would disagree with that, Your Honor, because I would say that that license agreement is specifically for rental spaces for where the gift market is being held. And if we were to exclude them from being able to enter and enter the premises, you obviously they cannot levitate there. They and the appellee says that itself. They have
but
to be able to ingress and egress.
They could, because these are areas that are open to the public, and so you don't need to give them permission anyway, right?
Correct.
Okay, so therefore we people can be on the same piece of property at the same time and have different characterizations, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
One could be an invitee, and one could be a licensee, and one could be a trespasser, and they're all at the same place at the same time, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And so we have to look not to where they are, but to why they're there, correct?
That is one thing that you can look for. It's not necessarily the end-all be-all. Yes, but for the fact that she wouldn't have had a ticket to the event, she wouldn't have been there. And we know that. However, you have to look again what she actually paid for. And you have to go back to the different cases, specifically those airport cases. And then there's a more recent case, which we didn't cite in our brief, but it's in the 13th Court of Appeals, and that's the City of McAllen versus Quintanilla. And that was decided on July 11th. And that case is where somebody else bought a patron a ticket to a bus a city-owned bus terminal, and that patron slipped and fell in the terminal building. And in that case, they said, well, no, he wouldn't have been in the bus terminal had he not had the ticket, but he didn't pay to use the particular premises on which he was injured. That buying that bus ticket was merely related to the use of the premises, and that's what we have here. Buying that ticket to the gift market would be to enter specific portions of Will Rogers. Buying that parking spot is for that specific use. However, walking on the sidewalk is merely related to the use.
And why would you have a license in your agreement with the Junior League that licensed the sidewalks expressly for ingress and egress? If they were just public sidewalks to begin with, there'd be no need to put that in the agreement.
Because I think what there is, Abilese and are reading more into that license agreement that's there. If you're talking about the contiguous common areas, that license agreement is referring to those common areas.
Well, that's different language. That's a different park. That's a different language. You've got contiguous areas, but you have ingress and egress to the facility.
And there's ingress and egress within the complex. There's ingress and egress within the different rooms of which
the sidewalks are not in the facility. The sidewalks
Correct.
Are outside the facility.
Correct.
Okay, so she's paid a fee to get into the parking lot for a parking space. And even under the airport cases, that means she's covered as an invitee exiting the parking lot and entering the parking lot as long as she's going to her parking space. Okay? She definitely is an invitee with regard to the Texas room or whichever the rooms that she walks into with regard to the purchases she made at the market, okay? And in the common areas around it, which would include inside the building and the stairs to get down there, that type of thing.
Yes,
okay?
Sure.
And on top of that, the Junior League has licensed the sidewalks for purposes of this market with regard to matters of ingress and egress. So if she literally is making a beeline from her parking spot to the market, crosses or uses a sidewalk to do all of those things, does not deviate to go see what, you know, Casa Manana looks like, okay?
Yes, Your Honor.
Then it would seem to me that, in fact, she's covered on all of that as an invitee. Why would that not be correct?
Because, Your Honor, I think you have to go back to the cases that talk about related. And I think you have to look at where the parking lot ends. You have to look at the different aspects of which the Junior League actually was licensed for. And I think reading into that license agreement that suddenly they have licensed the entire sidewalk is reading more into the four corners of the document than what is there.
We can read into it that it's the sidewalk to the extent that sidewalk is necessary for ingress or egress to the market. So again, if the plaintiff here goes around the corner to look at, you know, I haven't seen Casa Manana in a while, that has absolutely nothing to do with ingress or egress to the market. She hits a sidewalk defect at some point in time there. I don't think there's a problem with saying that's not covered by anything, any of the agreements here. Either her parking fee, her market fee, or the licensing agreement, or the lease. Doesn't cover any of that. But I don't see anywhere in here, other than her pleading that she went from her car to the market and back, I don't see any pleading and I don't see any evidence that she deviated from that simple thing.
And I agree, Your Honor, there's not any evidence of that. However, I think if you look broader, if you say that that license agreement allowed the Junior League license of all contiguous common areas, that means no matter where Ms. Posey walked from her car, whatever entrance she chose to take into Will Rogers Memorial Coliseum, somehow the Junior League had a license and then she had paid for any use of the entire complex, because that complex is not simply, that one building where the gift market was. It's the entire complex. So I think that reasoning would say, well, now suddenly she is an invitee on the entire premises, no matter which way she took, because there's more than one way to go from her vehicle to the entrance to get into the actual gift market, where she had to show the ticket that she paid for in order to enter. And I would go back to the fact that if you look at the record and you look at the deposition testimony of Kevin Kemp, multiple events occur on that facility at any given time. And in fact, that facility is not even locked most of the time, which I don't know if we want to tell everybody, but there are multiple events. We have to allow people in our license agreements to be able to use those common areas in order to access the different parts of that facility, whether they're going to a horse barn or they're going to go watch the rodeo or they're going in to the Christmas in Cowtown market. And Kevin Kemp's testimony shows that that ticket was what allowed her do a specific entry onto specific property, whereas that sidewalk is open to the public 24 hours a day. Anybody, regardless of whether they've paid for a ticket to enter, can walk on that sidewalk.
I did not see it in the record. Is there anything in the record that gives us a schematic of looking down on the property that would show us where the rooms were, that the market was in, where she was parked, and where the fall occurred?
No, that schematic is not in the record. You have to go by the testimony that Kevin Kemp gave that tells you that this particular sidewalk was outside of the facility and adjacent to the parking lot.
But it would be within the direct path that one would expect to go from the parking lot to this event, correct? She didn't park on the west side and walk all over on the south side to the east side to go in the door.
No, she did not. Or at least there is not contrary evidence that that's what she did. However, I would still say that this goes back very similar to those airport cases or the bus terminal cases where you can't just be related to it. And I would submit that the public sidewalk is merely related to the use, that we didn't license the Junior League or she didn't pay for that particular use of a sidewalk there. And so
let me ask you, assume she's a licensee. Mm-hmm. Is there not sufficient evidence in this record to create a fact issue as to whether the city had actual knowledge of the defect?
No, I think that there is actually no knowledge by the city, actual knowledge of this particular existence. If you look again, our facilities manager who's been with the city for 17 years, 18 years, 17 of those at Will Rogers, had no idea this existed. The very first time that he saw this particular
obstruction. A pipe plug that screws into the end of a pipe that has coating on it, he's not aware of.
I don't think anywhere in the record it says that it was screwed in or it had coating.
The picture shows it.
However, the pictures don't necessarily do it justice. What you have to go by is the knowledge. We had no prior reports of any injuries on this particular piece of sidewalk by this particular metal object. They point out that people were walking this sidewalk on the daily, and no one appreciated the fact or saw that this could cause an unreasonable risk of harm. Therefore, we had no knowledge, not only that it existed, we had no knowledge that it could cause an unreasonable risk of harm. And I think that goes to the fact that there was no actual knowledge, especially when we are regularly walking and inspecting this premises. And if after all of those years, the person you would expect to know it has never seen it, and that was the first time that he saw it, there can be no actual knowledge on the part of the city.
So who has the burden to establish on a plea to the jurisdiction lack of actual knowledge?
So as long as the plaintiff puts forth the evidence, then the city comes forth and we have to challenge that. We come and say the jurisdictional facts are not there. We bring forth evidence, and once we have raised that issue, then the claimant can come back and say, well, no, here is evidence that they did have knowledge. But I think that the undisputed evidence here shows that we had no actual knowledge. So if she is a licensee, you have to show actual knowledge. The evidence here shows we had no actual knowledge. And I think that is why the city has not had its immunity waived in this case, and why this case should be reversed and rendered. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Steve Samples. I am here on behalf of the appellant, Diane Posey. Before jumping into some of the merit discussions we had a moment ago, I want to move back in time a little bit to the procedural posture of the case. In a plea to the jurisdiction, the city has a threshold burden to come forth with evidence to put, you know, these key matters at issue. As Justice Birdwell pointed out, there is no schematic of the layout. There is nothing in the plea to the jurisdiction that in any way would rise to the level of summary judgment evidence to put this matter at issue. The sole offer of evidence by the city was the testimony of its corporate rep. And its corporate rep spoke to only the issue that Justice Wallach raised about a particular plot of land at any one time can have entrants on it that have mixed statuses. There can be an invitee and a licensee and potentially even a trespasser. That's all they said. And that doesn't in any way resolve the questions that we're having. Distinct from all the cases, you know, the airport cases, the bus cases, where the deal, if you will, is merely a ticket and perhaps a contract of carriage, there's a contract here. Diane Posey is the invitee of the Junior League. Junior League is the invitee of the city, and there is a contract there. Words are important. In the law and other endeavors, words have meaning. And the words show that Diane Posey, through the Junior League, paid for the use of the premises. She was on the sidewalk. The sidewalk was specifically licensed. The testimony was they paid for the space specified in the document and then the ability to access these spaces, and they specifically refer to the right to ingress and egress. And as was pointed out,
let me ask you this, counsel. With regard to the airports, the carriers in those airports have leases with regard to access to their planes. Okay, so they're leasing their gates. They're leasing their ticket, the places where they sell their tickets, take the luggage, etc. Okay. So if those cases make it clear that the mere purchase of the ticket doesn't invoke the lease, okay, that the carrier has, then why are we invoking the lease that the Junior League has here?
Sure.
With regard to the ticket.
And I can't speak to the characterization and character of the lease for an airline in a terminal. I would suggest to the court, though, that when the leased space is specifically a gate and the person, entity in control of the gate is the entity that leased it and not the airport, if the airport is sued, there may be a problem with suing the wrong defendant. With respect to hallways that connect, for example, the ticketing counter with the individual gate, that touches on our fact scenario, because here the interconnecting pathways are part of the thing, the scope of the lease agreement that the Junior League had with the city. It had the sidewalks. The testimony was amorphous in the concept of has the right to access, but it also specifically said the sidewalks, said that she has the right to use the sidewalks from ingress and egress, and that's exactly what she was doing at the time she fell. The inquiry should begin and end at that point because of the lease.
But even without that licensing language, it was a public sidewalk. There was nothing that excluded her from that sidewalk.
Right.
So why should we give effect to the license when it's superfluous with regard to her access to the sidewalk?
Sure. The as Justice Wallach pointed out, on a sidewalk, there can be mixed characters. The focus in the statute is that Diane Posey pay for the use of the premises. And that's all it says. It doesn't say that she pays for the use of the premises and every other entrant on those premises also paid. The fact that someone may not have paid doesn't change the characterization of her status on the land. I cited a case that I thought was somewhat informative about a railway terminal. The plaintiff in the railway terminal had entered the terminal to put a letter in the mailbox. Something happened. She was injured. She sued the railway company. You know, there was a concession that, yeah, people with passengers that are on
this,
the terminal.
This wasn't the one about the bomb going off and...
No, not that one.
Had to make a reference to Paul's graph. I'm sorry.
I know. But that's kind of where we are here. I mean, that's, there can be people on the sidewalk that did not, pay to use the sidewalk. And presumably there are people that weren't planning to go to the Christmas market or weren't intending, have the purpose as an invitee to avail themselves of some other paid-for event on the Will Rogers property. They could be wanting to just swing by and look at Casa Manana. Here, though, Diane Posey paid for the use of the premises, and she is an invitee. Speaking briefly to the knowledge of the city, the corporate rep testified that this, I'm going to call it a plumbing fixture, this fixture could have been there for as long as he had been there, 17 years. People walk past it. On average, probably 2 to 3 times a week. He said that the thing was open, did not concede that it was obvious, but pointed out that it was not hidden. When shown a photograph of it, he conceded it was a trip hazard, acknowledging that he's looking at a photograph in a deposition with the benefit of hindsight, but he called it a trip hazard in his deposition. And our burden to overcome the city's plea to the jurisdiction is to come forth with evidence that raise a fact issue on our points. The city calls it a trip hazard. The city says it was open. The city says it was not hidden. As to the knowledge of the city, this is not a grape in an HEB grocery store or water outside of an ice machine somewhere. This is a plumbing fixture that is cemented, concrete placement into a sidewalk. How long it's been there, the fact that there have not been any other reports of an injury are not relevant to the analysis, because how long it has been there is not something we're going to consider, because we're not trying to say, hey, was the grape there long enough for the HEB employee to locate it? This was cemented in. The city's own employee, own corporate rep, said that, construction on a city sidewalk is something that's not going to happen unless the city knows about it. And there was construction on the sidewalk. This is a plumbing fixture, screw cap, planted into it. The city knew it was there. With those comments, I realize I have remaining time, but in short, she's an invitee. The license agreement expressly provides that the sidewalks are part of the premises that the city permitted the Junior League and its invitees to use. They were used in the manner within the scope of that agreement for ingress and egress. She's an invitee. This defect was not something randomly placed on the sidewalk by Gremlins overnight. It was the pursuant to a construction project. The picture shows it's cemented in. For that reason, because she's an invitee, because she meets the standard, even under a licensee standard, the trial court got it right. The trial court got it right. And we ask that the court affirm that decision. And unless there are remaining comments, I'll yield the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Some brief points as to what Appley pointed out. They went back over of what she paid for, and again, I'd like to submit that she did not pay for the use of that premises, and I think you need to look at that. What was the premises on which she was injured? It's not the parking lot where she paid for. It was not inside the gift market where she had a ticket.
$7 she paid for the parking lot. The $12 she paid for where the market was.
Yes, Your Honor.
And ingress and egress to the market. So the only real question is whether somehow, because the sidewalk is open and public and can be used by anybody, whether that somehow renders the licensing language in the lease superfluous, and therefore that she goes from being an invitee on the parking spot, and then as long as she's on the sidewalk, she's trespasser. She's what?
She is just the licensee there. She's no different than if you look at this court in City of Fort Worth versus Sullivan, which Appley points to and says is very similar to this. In that case, there was a person paid for a wedding at the Botanic Garden in the Japanese Garden, and a guest of that wedding was injured when they were walking on a poorly lit path. And the court there said that because the gardens were closed to the public because a specific fee was paid for it, that claimant who tripped on a poorly lit path was an invitee there. They had paid for particular use of that premises, and this court looked at, would anybody else been able to use that particular premise at the time? And the court said no, because the gardens would have been closed to the public but for the fact that this fee was paid, only the wedding guests were allowed to attend. And that is, I think, is very similar to what we have here. This was still open to the public. It wasn't as if this sidewalk was closed off and only those people who had paid for either a ticket to the gift market or who had parked in a parking lot were able to use that sidewalk. And so I think you have to look at how that this court analyzed the facts in City of Fort Worth versus Sullivan. Also look at City of Dallas versus Thompson. Appley brought up the fact that this unknown metal object, a pipe, whatever you want to call it, we still don't know what it is, that it had been there for a long time and it was cemented in. And if you look at City of Dallas versus Thompson, they look at the fact that materials deteriorate over time and might become dangerous, don't create a dangerous condition. That actual knowledge required for liability was that the dangerous condition existed at the time of the accident. You have to look at the time of the accident. We learned in hindsight, not that this thing may have pushed up or deteriorated over time to become dangerous, but what we knew at the time of the accident. And the undisputed evidence here shows that the city had no knowledge that this condition existed such that it would be an unreasonable risk of harm. With that, we request that you reverse and render.
Thank you. We appreciate the arguments, and the case is submitted. Thank you all very much.